If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome back to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into John 8 of A Storm of Swords, also known as the greatest fantasy book ever written. Matt, how are you?
Hey, man. I am doing good, you know? I picked up a shift late last night at work. I'm feeling kind of dead, actually, to be entirely honest, because I work past midnight. I'll get the energy going here, you know.
Please clap.
Because we're gonna talk about a great chapter today, by the way. Short chapter.
For us a great chapter. I mean, where Donald Noy stands, so
we are.
Yeah.
One of the coolest moments in the show. I always love to bring it up. But yeah, other than that, man, pretty good. I'm trying to think of what all's
no heart palpitations. You don't have something growing on your back.
Been pretty good there. Saw the chiropractor today. Oh man, you get those adjustments. It feels great. You see a chiropractor?
I don't.
They get those adjustments, they snap your neck and it's like,
nah, man. I'm good, bro. I'm good.
The first time I did it, I was like, because like I went like months without him doing it. Like, oh, I can do your neck too. And I was like, okay. Especially because they get it to where it's like super tight, and they're like, all right, just let your head drop. And it's like, okay. Then it's like, oh man.
One day you're gonna walk out of there and not be able to look straight.
One day I might not walk out of there. No, it's pretty good. Jordan's a cool guy. He's my chiropractor guy. He's super into fantasy. We talk like every time I go in, we're talking. He's read A Song of Ice and Fire and all, you know.
Is he listening? Jordan, stuff. Are you listening?
I think he's watched a couple of videos or stuff like that. But I got him to read Night of Seven Kingdoms, and he watches. So anytime I go in, he watches shows, and you know, he's, you know, the same stuff where he's, oh, have you seen, you know, The Expanse? Have you seen this?
Oh, how nice.
Oh yeah, super cool.
Yeah, there's nerds everywhere, dude. That sounds like a good guy. Shout out to Jordan.
Oh yeah.
Shout out to chiropractors.
Love it, man. This is one of the best adjustments I've had in a while, dude. I needed it. So, you know.
Yeah, you're all loosened up, ready to go for the new Pokemon game tomorrow. You got your Pikachu shirt on, I see.
I do. That's for the baby. She is. I made her obsessed with Pikachu.
It's awesome.
Because I got her like a Pikachu thing. And then I was like, got some books. And then she was, began to put together like, oh, hey, this is the same thing. And then I put on the cartoon and she was like, ah. So now awesome. I got a Pikachu shirt. And every time I walk through the house, by the way, she just started walking. Like minutes before we started.
Really?
Like, I mean, she's taking some steps here and there, but like, I forgot to tell you that right before we hit record here. But yeah, like, I was like, uh-oh. You
know? That's a big level up.
Cheddar was like, what?
Yeah, that is, that's great news, man. It's going to be a little bit harder to watch her now.
That's fine. I'll just corral her. I'll set up some, you know, barriers.
Yeah, put down some pillows along the corners, those type of things.
She's never really done that. We never really had to worry about her like falling into things and stuff like that. Yeah, but I mean, she's been kind of like walking-ish, you know, for the past like 2 months where they can like hang on and monkey across things and stuff. So, yeah. But how you doing, man?
You know, just working a lot. Golfing? Yeah, I'm trying to get this golf game, you know, kind of squared away before the season ends. I will be golfing through the winter, but it's always harder because not every day is going to be friendly to the game. But I'm being sent on a golf charity event next week for my company, so I will be paid a full day's wages to go play golf. Pretty
How's
cool.
That? That's like your dream.
Oh, dude, yeah. I'm like,
so that
like,
would. So if you get paid to play a sport, Charity or not, you are a professional in my eyes.
I mean, I used to pay my rent with professional wrestling. It's not right. Sport, but, you know, athlete.
Yeah, it's more like a stuntman.
It's more like a bodybuilder stuntman at the end of the day.
Is it any different than like Cirque du Soleil? I mean, those people are
pretty athletic. Those people are pretty impressive.
But I mean, like they're, you know, I mean, gymnast, you know, whatever.
Yeah, athlete's a weird word. It's a very weird word.
You can do things that are athletic, but does that mean to me, an athlete is somebody who competes in a sport.
So would you say that Jamie Lannister is an athlete from sword fighting?
He fights in tourneys.
So you would say he's an athlete.
Yeah. If you're competing in a sport, which is tourneys, life, it doesn't matter whether it's life or death, but jousting technically isn't supposed to be like life or death.
So do you think that golf is athletic?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay.
I don't watch it, but I would consider esports a sport.
I don't know if I can get beyond that one.
Bowling, pool, darts.
Bowling's cool. Darts is cool.
I wouldn't consider like debating a sport, but I mean, even like gaming, like you are still, you know, it is like muscle memory. Got to be better than the other people. I can tell you right now, I can't move my mouse nearly as good as those other people in Call of Duty. So,
yeah, it's because you have a mortgage.
Yeah, it's true. So, you know.
That's what I do whenever I get killed in video games now as a 30 something year old. I just start screaming into the mic at the kids. I'm like, I have a mortgage.
Yeah. Well, should we dive in?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. Gee,
it'd probably help if I had the summary.
I mean, you are really
I'm off it today, you know. Anyway, here we go. So this is John 8. Of a Storm of Swords. The remaining members of the Night's Watch from Castle Black and several people from Molestown man the wall as Mance's army approaches. As the watch repels attack after attack from their great vantage point, some of the wildlings have reached the gate. To his surprise, John is left in command as Donald Noy leaves to defend the gate. John orders fire arrows and oil casks dropped onto the giants and mammoths, and the defenders once again repel the wildling attack. In the aftermath of the fighting, John goes down into the gate tunnel to find Donald Noy dead alongside Magmar Tundo Weg. When John tells Maester Aemon the news, the ancient Maester tells him that he must lead the watch now. Huge, monumental chapter. And, you know, it's one of these things on a reread where last week we were talking about Davos reading the letter from the Night's Watch.
Yeah.
And we like, because we're as a reread, we're not thinking about like all this stuff, but like now we're here and we're seeing the Night's Watch and we're doing that. It's just kind of like I kind of think about it more as like, well, this is actually what sends them all the way north later, because it's like we're not going to see that until, you know, much later. But pretty interesting that it is, you know,
straight away
it does tie directly into it, and it's just like you don't really put those pieces together until you read it, you know, where you read the book straight through.
Yeah, and another thing is we can kind of take the situations together. Like John injured, kind of on one leg, having almost like a fever dream of sorts.
Mm-hmm. And that's how the chapter opens.
Yeah, and it ties into the way Davos felt at the beginning of the book when he was almost in a fever dream on the island, right? Stannis is on his last leg. Like there are some parallels that you can actually take between the two situations. That's pretty cool. One of the things that I feel so surprised by on this read, I always try to think about like what's different this time, is I think I kind of visualized this chapter in a different way after reading it this time. This battle is almost supposed to be like kind of a fever-induced hallucinogen. Like it's supposed to be very trippy almost, I think. And because we're seeing it through John's eyes, we have to remember that is the POV. And I just think that some of the details of the battle feel a lot more almost dreamlike, because we open up with John in a dream and then he comes out of the dream and then he's in this weird in-between state and he has a fever for his leg that's broken. And it just is a lot more maniacal than I ever mm-hmm. remember it being. Like John is screaming like a madman and laughing at the top of the wall. It's a very big moment because at the end, Master Aemon, of course, says, "Jon Snow, the wall is yours." So it's, I don't know, it's almost like John snaps a little here.
Yeah.
Maybe a little Mad King-esque. Nah.
You know, I will say, and this is part of this thing where this is why a POV read is so good, is because mm-hmm. like the last time we were with John, it was chapter 55. That's a while ago.
Yeah.
Think about what happens in between there. You have the brand, so the, you know, the brand chapter, the Daenerys chapter, Tyrion, right? Mm-hmm. You know, Sansa, like the Red Wedding, like the news of the Red Wedding, the Purple Wedding, all happens in between this. But if you're reading it straight through, well, then it's Aegret just died.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and that it's one of the things where reading it this way, I felt like I, like, that's like lost in this. Is, I mean, he mentions her and he thinks of her, but so much just happens and it's chaos. You don't really have time to think about it from that perspective. And that's just one of the things I love about, and this is about George and his writing, is like that POV. It's like, there's just two ways to experience it mm-hmm. where you're doing like the POV read and you're doing the straight through read. And but if you're doing it straight through, you kind of miss that, because I was like, man, it's just that weight from it is lost, because that was like 10 chapters ago.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's a big 9 chapters ago, but that's a big gap with
a lot of stuff happens between.
Yeah. Like Purple Wedding stuff happens. I mean, big monumental other stuff happens.
Mm-hmm. It also serves as a function, though, for it being so separated, to make it feel less unrealistic that John has to like do new things in this chapter. Right now we could have a chapter where he's just down and out and grieving, but George is obviously in the back half of his climax book for the first arc of the story, so John has to do something else in his next chapter. We have to keep the momentum going for his plot, so it's kind of nice to have that little bit of a break, because if it was right after, like if the next John chapter was in 2 chapters, you would expect a whole chapter of him just grieving Aegret, I would imagine. Right. So it makes it feel a little less maybe cold that John, well, he's still processing it in this chapter. It's not like he's completely forgotten about her and he's just fine now, but he does have to like man the station, take charge. And I think it just makes it feel a little more realistic with that gap in between. Were you kind of shocked reading that, like John laughing maniacally at the top of the wall? Like I think that.
Yeah. It's like that, you know, everything's lost, burn it all down type of a thing. Yeah. Dragon. Maybe it's fire and blood.
That's what I was thinking. Like maybe that little switch is getting flipped. And also very cheeky of George to say that, you know, maybe if he had a couple trebuchets, 20 or 200 trebuchets that would like go on the wall and be able to move around. But then he says, or maybe a dragon or 3, which coincides with the 3 heads of the dragon. Mm-hmm. And also just happens to be 3 dragons in Essos right now from his aunt. So kind of cheeky of George to include that there. And then obviously him in his dream calling for his father, thinking that it's Eddard. But in reality, he's yelling for Rhaegar.
Could be.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so much of that. Real quick, I am looking up, you know, because we're going to be doing, when we get there, by the way, mm-hmm. when we get to the next 2 books, we're going to be doing the Boiled Leather, which is the combining them to make it chronological, because I don't think anyone else has done it. We've been planning on doing it for years. But now I'm thinking about this and I'm like, man, I'm looking to see if anybody has done a timeline like of these books, because, you know, some of these, even some of the first 3 books, the chapters, as we know, like it's like Game of Thrones seems like it's pretty chronological, like start to finish. But some of the other books, you know, it's not chronological, like exactly chronological the way some of the things happen. And I'm wondering if this is it, because it's like exactly how many days have passed since Aegret died. Mm-hmm. Was like 1. It feels like Mance was like pressing. Like it feels like this is like supposed to be like a 3-day event.
Yeah, a long weekend.
Right. So it's like, did the purple wedding and all that stuff happen? Like, Egret dies, and then what? There's like a day or two, and like the purple wedding happens inside of that, mm-hmm. in those 2 days, or some things.
It's a busy, busy week in Westeros.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what I mean? It's like crazy to think about that, but that's why it's only supposed to be like 3 years in between like the start to Dance of Dragons.
Crazy.
Yeah, so I'm looking at it. I don't think I'm sure maybe it's one of those like old like Forum of Ice and Fire posts or something like that where somebody has done it, but yeah, I can't seem to find anything where somebody has like totally.
Well, the timeline also gets even trickier in Boiled Leather, obviously, just from the split. So it'll be interesting to read in that manner where things are closer together.
Oh, never mind. Just found one. Let's go. I'm gonna have to dive deep into this. Forum of Ice and Fire. Somebody has a shareable Google Doc, and it's like every chapter. Oh yeah, I'll send you this here real quick. This is so sick. We're gonna have to dive into this at some point, because I was just thinking about that as we're doing it. I'm like, man, you know, like the timeline of how this all happens. But regardless, we're here and we're at this big battle and everything. So yeah, the opening of this is super important and powerful.
Wow, this timeline is so insane, bro.
Awesome. We're gonna have to dive into
this. There are 457 entries.
Yeah. Here, I can
share. And it is noted.
Because they'll be watching the YouTube video of this.
Wow. Yeah.
But this is somebody's take on it, of course. So, like, look, this person here is saying that that Daenerys 1 of A Dance of Dragons takes place inside of, you know, Storm of Swords, Dance of, then we know Dorne, like, so some of a Feast for Crows and A Dance of Dragons are happening inside of a Storm of Swords, according to this person. Now, but I think it's probably pretty accurate.
I mean, I had to look through it and kind of see what they think, but I'm fascinated by this idea.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, I think it's probably pretty accurate, because some of it too, like, some of the characters whose story finishes early. Right, like Davos, the story is, if we don't see Davos again until The Dance of Dragons, right? So like, how much stuff happened?
I was just thinking about Davos,
because that's who we read last week. Yeah,
yeah, and he's also gone for so long, and you know, we're thinking, is he with Rickon? Like, oof, man.
Yeah, so we're gonna have to dive into that. Pretty cool. Okay, but back to the chapter here. So yeah, so he dreamt he was back in Winterfell, limping past the stone kings on their thrones, their gray granite eyes turned to follow him as he passed, and their gray granite fingers tightened on the hilts of their rusted swords upon their laps. "You are no Stark," he could hear them muttering in heavy granite voices. "There is no place for you here. Go away." He walked deeper into the darkness. "Father," he called. "Bran, Rickon." No one answered. A chill wind was blowing on his neck. "Uncle," he called. "Uncle Benjen." "Father, please, father, help me." Up above, he heard drums. "They are feasting in the great hall, but I am not welcome here. I am no Stark. This is not my place." His crutch slipped and he fell to his knees. The crypts were growing darker. "The light has gone out somewhere." "Egret," he whispered. "Forgive me, please, but it was only a direwolf, gray and ghastly, spotted with blood, his golden eyes shining sadly through the dark."
And then he ends up thinking it's ghost, and he goes, "Well, it's not ghost, it's gray. It's like Bran's wolf," but he's actually misremembering. This is an unreliable narrator, because whose wolf is gray with yellow eyes? Robb Stark's.
Yeah. And you know, some other interesting things happen in that, right? So yeah, he's in the crypts of Winterfell, and also, who are the first people he thinks of? Bran and Rickon, who were hiding in the crypts of Winterfell, but John didn't know that.
Ooh,
right? Like that. John didn't know that. He wasn't there. So you know, is that something? Could this
and we've
be
always it? Wanted the crypts to be something more too,
right? Now, dreaming, we don't know. There's nothing to indicate that dreams can be influenced. Like in Wheel of Time, that's a huge deal. Like,
yeah,
dream manipulation and the dream
world. It's like called something, Emmerlane, or I can't remember.
Yeah, it's like its own world, which is a really cool thing, by the way. It's one of the coolest parts of Wheel of Time. But in A Song of Ice and Fire, there's nothing like that. Now, we know Bran and Bloodraven and stuff like that might be able to influence the past, and Bran does have dreams of the Three-Eyed Crow, but Bran is also perhaps the Three-Eyed Crow himself, right? And so is he doing those dreams through the future and the past? But what we haven't seen Although John does have some pretty prophetic dreams, as does Daenerys. And is this like a dragon dream we've talked about before? Are they green? Are green dreams just are dragon dreams just green dreams, or are they from a different power or a different source? Because there are parallels of power, right? And that's something we've talked a lot about, like blood magic. Is it just magic? Is magic? Is blood magic special? Is king's blood special? Is king's blood just blood magic? It's one of the coolest things about A Song of Ice and Fire is the way George has all of these different things, these different powers, but you view them slightly differently, so they feel like they're different, but they may not be.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I really like the fact that you caught on to that Bran and Rickon being in the crypts thing, and then he thinks of Bran instead of Rob, which is that a miss? Is that a, you know, is he misremembering the wolves, or is it possible that the next time we read a Bran chapter, we'll be able to figure out something?
Well, as we know, remember when I did that big statistical analysis, yep, is that John appears in almost every Bran chapter, or is mentioned, or is referenced, which is wild.
Yeah.
By the way.
And John thinks of Bran, right? Isn't that what we all like? John thinks of Bran more often than any of his other siblings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, because you'd think it would be Arya.
But yeah. It's not. And I think that there might be a reason for that later on.
Yeah.
I think Bran will have a lot to do with John's eventual realization of who he really is.
Yeah. Continuing on just a little bit here. So then he's in a cell, and he's, you know, a ghost, and he's thinking about all the things. Because remember, Gretch just died, and he brings that up, and he's like, I can't leave the watch. I, you know, did all these things. Maester Aemon's like, too bad. You're in charge.
Yeah.
So is Donal Noy. Hey. You're in charge. We'll get to that. We think of the Horn of Winter here as brought up. The Horn of Winter, he thought, still confused from sleep, but Mance never found Jorman's horn, so that couldn't be. A second blast followed, as long and deep as the first. John had to get up and go to the wall, but he knew, you know, but it was so hard. He shoved aside his furs and sat. The pain in his leg seemed duller. Nothing. He could not stand. He had slept in his breeches and tunic and small clothes for the added warmth, so he had only to pull on his boots and don leather and mail and cloak. The horn blew again. Two long blasts, so he slung a long claw over one shoulder, found his crutch, and hobbled down the steps. So cool. Yeah. George is so great at describing, like, action scenes.
Yeah, I love his battle scenes. They're very reminiscent of Bernard Cornwell, who has written a bazillion Sharp books, and he also did The Last Kingdom, which got adapted into a Netflix show, and then he also has the Warlord Chronicles, which is an Arthurian retelling that's great. Cornwell is renowned for how well he writes combat, and I know George has actually said that Bernard Cornwell is one of his big influences when it comes to writing that action, and also just by historical nature of the writing. I think they go kind of hand in hand. And this battle was awesome. And like I said, it came through almost in a fever dream, which made it even more interesting this time around. I almost looked at John as like a crazed man screaming at the top of this, you know, like 6,000 foot wall that's ran by magic and is ice. Like it's kind of just a wild image.
Okay. Hold on. Hear me out here. Okay. Okay. Let me read this next line. So you go just a little bit earlier, right? Is it Mance Rayder? We can hope so. There were worse things than wildlings in the dark. John remembered the words the wildling king had spoken on the fist of the first men as they stood amidst that pink snow. By the way, dawn, you know, and all those things. Think about the pink and the snow and all that stuff. When the dead walk, walls and stakes and swords mean nothing. You cannot fight the dead, Jon Snow. No man knows that half as well as me. Just thinking of it made the wind seem a little colder. So this, I believe, is this chapter right here is really kind of Jon's Daenerys with the Three Dragons chapter. Like, a lot of these characters go through these like metamorphosis and everything. Daenerys is like the first to happen because there is magic involved. As you were talking about, John is standing on top of a magical wall and perhaps having a magical dream, right? And certainly thinking of his direwolf, which is magical. And he's also wielding a sword, which also just by being Valyrian steel has some kind of magic embedded in it. But I mean, he just lost Gret, much like Daenerys lost Khal Drogo.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. They both have a pretty similar thing. I mean, it's different in the way it takes place, but there is magic involved in both. There is loss of a loved one, of, you know, potential like soulmate, right? Like, it's pretty similar. It's just, you know, it's different how it takes place. But after that, Daenerys is like Khaleesi. Right. I mean, afterwards, it's like, they all see it and she's got dragons now. And they're like, oh, she's Khaleesi, mother of dragons. And John, after this is the thing that makes him Lord Commander.
Yeah. And dons a title, new responsibilities, is seen different. I mean, it's a coming of age.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just kind of, I mean, it's different, but it's ice and it's also fire. Right. I mean, there is a difference. And John here thinking about this, I can't fight the dead. He was also thinking, I'm no Stark. Well, we know both of those things are, you know, likely to be untrue. He is. Well, whether he's a Targaryen or not, he is a Stark. Even if he's actually just Ned Stark's son, I mean, he's not like a true born son, but he is still a Stark.
He's a son of Winterfell.
He is a son of Winterfell either way. Let's go. Okay. So it kind of continues on a little bit here. You know, they're walking the wall, they're getting things manned. There's a mammoth coming. There's giants coming.
So epic.
Just setting the scene so well. You know, Donald Noy, one of my favorite characters, like so underrated. It's a shame he was not in the show. You know, he turned towards the two great trebuchets that Beau and Marsh had restored to working order. Give me light, he roared. Barrels of pitch were loaded hastily into the slings and set afire with the torch. The wind fanned the flames to a brisk red fury. Now, Noy bellowed. The counterweights plunged downward. The throwing arms rose to thud against the padded crossbars. The burning pitch went tumbling through the darkness, casting an eerie flickering light upon the ground below. So cool. Like,
yeah.
The stage here, I mean, it is like, it is ramped up to the max. Again, he now showed it. The trebuchets loaded once more. Two barrels of burning pitch went crackling through the gloom to come crashing down amongst the foe. This time, one of them struck a dead tree, enveloping it in flame. Now a dozen mammoths, John saw, 100. Like, just such a cool scene to set here. It's like pitch black, middle of the night, army approaching. And like, you guys are there and you guys are trying to do it. And like, you know, season 8 gets criticized a lot, but I do think like the battle at Winterfell is freaking awesome. Like, just as television, it's a freaking sick battle.
It's a spectacle for sure.
Yeah. And like, even though the scene, you know, whatever, yeah, like Melisandre and the fire, and when it goes out, like when the fire of the Dothraki, like when they ride out and it all starts going out one by one, like, cool scene. And that's kind of similar to what's happening here.
Yeah. And I will say this about the battle for Winterfell in season 8. My heart was racing the entire episode, whether or not there was too much plot armor. You know, it was dark for some people. I didn't actually have that issue. Thankfully, I had a perfectly calibrated OLED TV at the time. So I was like bawling out. I was like, this is sick. Right. And when I got online, everyone was like mad. I was like, what? And then I watched it on my laptop. And I was like, oh, you can't see shit. Like,
that's right. Yeah.
Anyways, this is epic stuff, dude. And also, you really do feel like the chips are down. You really believe that the Night's Watch is kind of broken at this point. I mean, already a joke, but now it's really broken. They don't have trebuchets that they need. They certainly don't have a dragon. They don't have thousands of men. But when John kind of snaps a little bit and says, the wall will defend itself. Yeah. We're up here. They're down there.
Dude,
what
there
are they
going
to do to us up here?
I know. And there's a line later too. So it's a few pages later once they're actually like, when they're drawing the arrows and just firing, mm-hmm, and they're like, you better not miss. Right. You know, they're saying all these things. The ram was down and done. He saw the giants who's pushed it dead or dying. Fire arrows, he shouted. I want that ram burning. The screams of wounded mammoths and the booming cries of giants mingled with the drums and pipes to make an awful music. Yet still his archers drew and loosed, as if they'd all gone as deaf as Dick Follard. They might be the dregs of the order, but they were men of the Night's Watch, or near enough, no matter. That's why they shall not pass.
Woo!
Let's go, dude.
And stand by and stand down, Gandalf. Okay.
I know. You feel bad for the mammoth, so it's not their fault.
I feel bad. Oh my God. At the end, when Mag the Mighty goes down,
yeah,
I got a little emotional.
Yeah.
little emotional.
Well, he fights a song. Well, he doesn't in the show, in the books yet, but in the show, man, the giants, the stand tall with them. Yeah. And they like when they like the Battle of the Bastards, when that giant goes in, like it's sick,
dude. Yeah, dude. Battle. I need to watch the later seasons again just for the spectacle.
Yeah.
Enjoy it for what it is.
But this in the show is freaking sick. Now it's different because Don O'Noy isn't there.
But by the way,
hold the gate. Yeah. So epic. Yeah, so man. Grant and all those guys go down there. Hold the gate.
Everyone loves a good last stand, Matt.
So sick. Yeah. Awesome, phenomenal. One, I think one of the most underrated moments in all of Game of Thrones, because
yeah,
there's so much out, like, you know, then you get to like the mountain, the Viper and the mountain fight. And then of course, you know, like the Battle of Winterfell later and the Battle of the Bastards and all these things, but super underrated.
I agree in
Game of Thrones.
I agree. Yeah. And this chapter is very underrated in many ways. I mean, when you think about the importance of it for John's character, it's huge. And Maester Aemon gets a nice little, you know, he kind of gives John the kill the boys speech part two in some ways. And also he's sitting there thinking about his family. Meanwhile, he has a relative sitting right next to him. It's kind of ironic, right? I think this chapter slaps, and Donald Noy is one of our favorite book only characters, and his end here is heart wrenching. He's a hero,
right?
He's a true hero.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Donald Noy is fantastic. And you know, a lot of Tyrion takes a lot of his, like those speeches early on
in a Game
of Thrones. Tyrion kind of takes that role at the wall, which is still good. And I think it works ultimately. And it also helps Tyrion seem cool, because Tyrion also does have like a similar one when they're in the woods, when they're both traveling up there. Like, so like in the books, Tyrion does have that speech. So I think it kind of worked to just expand it out to be Tyrion in the show. But I want to dive a little bit into like how this chapter ends, because you know, we've talked a lot about the battle and everything, but I think something that's really cool and kind of missed here is Maester Aemon being the one to tell John, you know, I'm a maester chained in sword. My orders serve, John. We give counsel, not commands. Someone must. You must lead. No. Yes, John. It need not be for long, only until such a time as the garrison returns. Donald chose you and Corrin Halfhand before him. Lord Commander Mormont made you his steward. You are a son of Winterfell, a nephew of Benjen Stark. It must be you or no one. The wall is yours, Jon Snow. So...
Boom.
So sick from Maester Aemon giving him his like blessing and saying, hey, you got to step up. Because, and I want to go just dive in here about the Maester Aemon angle, because, you know, we think about him and, you know, he's having this fever dream where he just wants to meet Daenerys and all of these things, right? He just wants to go there and meet her. And, you know, if he could give her advice and just talk to her and, you know, all of these things.
Yeah.
But he does do that with John, someone who is his family member. So maybe this is actually like some of that stuff where he's so longing to see Daenerys towards the end, but he's also in a fever dream. That makes me think a little bit on the idea of like, maybe he didn't know John was related to him. Cause we talked about like, was Maester Aemon in contact with Rhaegar and, you know, all these things. And did he know John was a Targaryen when he gives him that speech when he shows up? And I think, you know,
I don't think he knows, but he might have like some suspicions.
Yeah.
That's a hard one to like put together if you don't have firsthand information, though. Like, that's a real tough angle to figure out in world.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot more action in this chapter. We don't necessarily have to go over all of it because it's just, I mean, it's pretty straightforward, really. But as far as like big theories and everything that goes on. Yeah. I mean, any final takeaways here, Jimmy?
This is one of those examples where I think that, you know, reading the written word and not being in the show is you get to kind of reimagine a lot of these scenes. And you know, a lot of the characters live inside of our head from the television shows, but Jon Snow here, I feel, is staunchly different than the Jon Snow in the scene, this scene in the show. There is a little bit of chaos, and that's kind of what I took away from this. And it's kind of sick that George was able to write this, like almost like hallucination during battle scene with Jon. And I think Jon's just a better character in the books. To be honest, I really like him in the books more than the show. I like Kit Harington a lot, but
Yeah. Oh, agreed. And this is, and this is also one of those things where, you know, the show gets to add that scene because John isn't down there. So he does, that's, and that's what we see, right? The hold the gate scene, because we gotta see it in the show, right? Because the show can show us different angles and characters. But you know, the last time, you know, he's actually alive in our reread here, you know. Are they all dead? Maester Aemon asked softly. Yes, Donal was the last. Noy's sword was sunk deep in the giant's throat, halfway to the hilt. The armor had always seemed such a big man to John, but locked in the giant's massive arms, he looked almost like a child. The giant crushed his spine. I don't know who died first. He took the lantern and moved forward for a better look. Mag, I am the last of the giants. He could feel the sadness there, but he had no time for sadness. It was Mag the Mighty, the king of the giants.
Yeah.
Brutal on both ends.
Exactly. George does a great job of, even though we have this proud moment of like Donal Noy stood with the, you know, with the realms of men, and he was part of the Night's Watch. We still feel the humanity of war, the tragedy of it.
Right. And closing up here, I think it's one of the things that ultimately causes us to really appreciate and like Mance Rayder, because once you get to know the wildlings more and you know, like the realistic threat of the White Walkers are coming and everything, then you're like, oh, well, like, yeah, they had to get the fuck out of there.
Yeah. They're fighting for their lives.
Right. Yeah. They have no other choice.
Yeah. It could have been
winter is coming. Yeah.
Yeah, it could have been goblins at the wall. It has nothing to do with it being the Night's Watch or Westeros. There's a climate disaster happening and we need to move.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, all right. Well, let's see. Where are we at next time?
Arya.
That's right. So we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing A Storm of Swords, Chapter 65, Arya 12.
And if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheneepodcast.com.
We'll see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.